Hi, this is Mick from Bell and Sebastian, and you're listening to DITR 101.9 FM.
This is Dylan Osick from Slingshot, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC.
Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR, or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend the hour with us, we're really, really glad to have you. So even though it's not the most sexiest topic, it's a really important topic in terms of sexual abuse. And it's one of those things that sometimes as parents, as educators, as just guardians for kids, we don't talk about that enough. And we don't provide enough tools. And I think it's very true because if you look at the stats, one out of three women have dealt with sexual violence before the age of 18. One out of six men have as well. So I'm really excited. Joining me tonight, I've got a very special guest who is calling in, even though it is a three-hour time difference, so it's 1 a.m. her time right now. The lovely Kimberly King, who is who's written a wonderful book, which is different from a lot of other books in regards to sexual abuse, and I think it's really cool. So we're going to be chatting a lot about that in this next hour, and also just how we can encourage and change things, hopefully. So hopefully 20 years from now, things will be a lot different for everybody. So Kimberly, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So if you could just give our listeners a little bit of information in regards to why you wrote the book, because I was reading the afterword just in the notes, and I was like, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, well, I wrote the book with my son. It was in 2006 after he had a traumatic night at a sleepover with a friend of his, and he basically ran into a situation that he didn't really know how to handle, where a little boy was making inappropriate advances towards him. And he tried on his own to, you know, put a stop to the situation by using his words. And then he told the mom, and then he told his sister, who was also there sleeping over. And nothing really worked, so he ended up locking himself in the bathroom for the entire night. And when I picked him up, I saw on his face that there was something terribly wrong, and mm-hmm. he came right out and told me what happened. And so basically the process of sort of recovering from the night and talking to doctors and seeing a therapist and trying to figure out how to help him, it did really affect him quite significantly. Mm-hmm. So we started doing a journal, which was suggested to us. And the book basically kind of came out of his journal writing.
That's fantastic.
So we talked a lot every night about how he was feeling on a variety of different things, and we talked about what happened to him and, you know, what he could have done differently, and then we started talking about other scenarios that could happen, and then we started generating all these neat ideas that we thought would be really helpful to kids, and we both decided it would make a great book to help other people.
Which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, it was a really good therapeutic experience to, you know, go through the whole thing with him. And it really did help. And a lot of, he was six at the time, so a great deal of his writing was, you know, very basic at the time. And he would draw, and he might sound out words, and I would, you know, dictate and write underneath what he was saying. But it got a lot out. It helped. And at the same time that all this was going on, he had a dad deployed in Iraq. So, you know, he had a lot of other stuff that he needed to talk about as well. So that was how the book started.
That's incredible.
And, you know, I am a kindergarten teacher and have kind of encountered all these similar stories throughout my teaching career. There hasn't been a year that has gone by where I haven't heard at least 3 or 4 stories from parents and kids in my classes and at my school. So it's out there, and I just decided it was really time to try and do something active to help, you know, prevent this kind of thing.
No, I think that's so important, and please forgive me, listeners out there as well. I'm losing my voice. It's the lovely meningitis of the season, so the virus is going around.
Oh, dear.
I know. But I said no. It's available on Amazon.com right now. And so one of my questions I was going to ask in regards to that is, what is some of the feedback you've been getting from parents?
Well, Amazon.com has this little 5-star, 1 through 5-star rating system where readers can leave feedback. So I've gotten tons of really great feedback on there, which you can log on and see. And most people have said it's the best book that they have read on the topic, and the majority of people agree that it's perfect for the age group 5 through, like, 12. I've had one negative comment that perhaps it, you know, was a little wordy, but it's actually meant to be read in sections because I don't think it's the kind of book you can just read once and then put down and you're done with it. It's sort of designed so that you talk about one topic, you read about a topic, you chat with your parent, and maybe you write about it. So it's kind of like a process book, not really like rush through it and there you know all about sexual abuse prevention.
Well, it sounds like it's almost a workbook too in regards to some of the exercises that you've got in there.
Yeah, it is. And at the end of the book, this was my son's idea, at the end of the book, the last 2 pages are, okay, now you can help finish our story by writing, you know, about some things you've encountered or if you ever had a red flag situation. In the book, we identify red flag and green flag people and red flag and green flag behaviors. And that's one of the talking points in there. And then at the end, that child who read the book will write, you know, their stories of this scenario. So they get to finish the book, which is kind of cool. So
that is really cool. It's very much like choose your own adventure, choose your own ending.
Yeah, exactly.
What is the what is a red flag versus a green flag person?
Well, in our story, in the very beginning, we start by kind of like defining, okay, what are the safe boundaries for you, and what are the boundaries of your private areas? And we talk about boys being, you know, that their private parts are anything that's under their underwear, and girls, their private parts are anything that would be under their underwear and like a tank top. And we build from the very beginning, going back, you know, to when you're a baby, you know, who takes care of you, mom and dad, and what's okay when you're a baby? What do they have to do to take care of you? And we talk about how when you're a baby, your mom and dad have to wipe you to get you clean and keep you safe and healthy. And then we go on to talk about how doctors sometimes might have to check your private parts. And we establish a little pattern about who is okay and under what circumstances. And then we build on that and say, and then other than that, everybody else, you need to be very careful with, and you need to make sure that you are feeling comfortable and safe, and you're not, you know, worried or concerned. And red flag people would be anybody who attempted to touch your private parts, or anybody who attempted to show you theirs, or anybody who even made you feel uncomfortable, you know, strange, uneasy on the topic of private parts in general.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And in regards to that, can red flag, green flag be used as code words, too, to let an adult know that they're not comfortable necessarily if there's a kid that is making them feel awkward?
And we kind of did my family, my husband, ex-husband was in the Navy, and my kids, you know, have been on his ship. And they always discuss the whole flag situation where they, you know, they fly certain flags under various conditions. And so, you know, Jack thought it would be neat because the green flag is supposed to symbolize, you know, like as if it's your ship sailing. The green flag is basically like everything is okay. You feel safe. You feel comfortable. You're happy. Smooth sailing ahead. And then, you know, it teaches kind of about identifying your feelings as they change, because red flag, you get some worrisome, dangerous feelings, and you get maybe uncomfortable, uneasy, sad, angry, scared, and maybe you just feel yucky because things are just rough. And it's just teaching kids to, at a very basic level, just with the colors, just to sort of, you know, identify different feelings.
No, that makes sense. In regards to with the children, has in terms of the school system, because you're a kindergarten teacher as well, what is the feedback you've gotten from your peers?
Well, I tried to promote, you know, the book discreetly as I was teaching kindergarten and shared with my parents. You know, I passed the book through my class, and, you know, just they would go one through another and pass it on. And I got overwhelming responses from everybody about, you know, how they thought it was such a valuable tool, and they were all asking me if I could start doing some kind of training seminar for parents. And I actually, in the midst of that request, came across this organization called Darkness to Light.
Is that the one that you're donating the proceeds to?
Have you heard of them?
You had mentioned that you were donating part of the proceeds from the book to it.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit about
them. So they are a nonprofit organization that what they're doing at the moment is they are basically forming this movement to educate anybody who deals with children and parents also on, you know, what to look for, how to prevent sexual abuse, what to look for, the signs, the risk factors. And you can take this training online, and it's like a 4-hour module, but it's concise and exactly the information that every parent, educator, or anybody that deals with children should really take. So in lieu of me leaving my teaching job and going to do that, I just told all my parents about the resource. And there's this huge campaign that they're doing now to bring these training programs into the community, and it's called Stewards of Children.
Stewards of Children.
Yeah, and their website is full of all sorts of really valuable information for your readers to check out, or your listeners to check out. And it's just www.darknesstolight.com.
And I think that's really good that you're partnering with that organization. I think it's really important. And worldwide, it's a huge thing. So in Canada, have you had a lot of response as well, or mainly in the States at this stage?
I've only really heard from people via the community here in Virginia Beach and parents here, and then just Amazon listeners or Amazon feedback readers. And at this point, I think the topic is really talked about a whole lot more because of all the recent stuff that's been going on out there in the world. And all of a sudden, the book is getting a whole lot more attention, and my publisher is on a mission now. He's really excited about getting the message out there so that it can help more children. So it's a big swing all of a sudden, which is great.
Which is really fantastic. And as I was saying at the top of the show, according to Amnesty International, 1 out of 6 men have dealt with sexual violence before the age of 18, 1 out of 3
yeah.
women worldwide. And so those are really epidemic stats. So it's really good that you've got this. And my question is, I think it's fantastic that you're working with that organization. I'm just curious in regards to how further reaches, because what I'd love to see, and I don't know if this is on the agenda or not, but using the work that you're doing, seeing if you might even be able to do webinars, that type of thing, training through that at some point, so then that way different people can take what you've got in the book, integrate it, and based on what's going on within their community, and kind of own
yeah.
it in that sense. But then that way, where it's a huge broad reach.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Darkness to Light is, and I'm not working for them or anything.
No,
I just they were the only resource I could find that
yeah.
had everything I needed.
Mm-hmm.
So they were the most thorough organization with, I thought, a very clear mission. And as a teacher, I was just attracted to their nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
So I contacted them, sent them my book, and just let them know that I was going to be donating a portion of the proceeds to them because, you know, you can write a book to help children, and if you're an author, you know, eventually you will, hopefully if your book sells, you will eventually make a little bit of money, but the book will only get to the people that buy it. So by donating it to that organization, I thought, you know, there would be a multiplier there because they will then take that and help way more people than my book is probably ever going to reach. But they have a very extensive website with all sorts of information. You were mentioning statistics, and you know, I just popped back on their website tonight to just review. And what I find that is really interesting is that, and this is the topic about the book, that some of this sexual abuse goes on between children, older children and young children. And that's a big piece that everybody misses in teaching their children about sexual abuse prevention, because we tend to focus, and I did too, you know, I told my children, don't, you know, keep your private parts private, and we read books, and our bodies are to ourselves, and we had all those talks, but I never really told them that, you know, you might have to anticipate this kind of thing from another child. And so 60% of children that report abuse are actually reporting it from older children or from people that they trust, people that they know, family members. 30% of children abused by family members, which... it's just staggering.
It is.
So, and it, what I like about their organization is that they're focusing on those institutions where we put trust for our children. And we have to, you know, leave our children sometimes at sporting events, daycare centers, churches. And, you know, those people have to know how to deal with this if they get a report that there is some kind of a sexual abuse thing going on at church. They need to know what to do to handle it, and they need to know what to do to prevent it. So,
and I think a lot of times, I know because I do a lot of work separate of here, working with a lot of women and children, a lot of times a lot of the policy making is usually focused on adult versus child, as opposed to child versus child.
Exactly, and you know, I think it's an important piece not to miss, so...
And it's interesting, too, because I think as adults, sometimes we just assume it's exploring their sexuality. And I guess that's one of the questions I want to ask is, what's the difference between exploring healthy sexuality and being able to establish those boundaries so that it's not abuse?
Yeah, and, you know, that is one of those questions that is hard to answer and I struggle with sometimes. But for me, I think... you know, sexual curiosity is completely normal for children, and they all have it. But, you know, when you're between the, it depends what age you are, but when you're between 0 and 2, you know, you're just getting that sensory development of your body. You might know the difference between males and females. You know, you might be running around naked all the time, and there's nothing wrong with that. You're learning terms for your body, and You're always with people who are taking care of you. And then as you get a little bit older, you know, kids are curious about other people's parts. And, you know, you always hear about kids playing doctor and, you know, trying to look at each other when they're going to the bathroom and all those kind of things. And then into middle school, it gets, you know, 5 and 8 and then up, it gets more complicated. But I think that parents kind of have to talk to their children about, like, what they feel is natural within their family, because people have all different levels of, like, what they're comfortable with. But, you know, I think a big point to make is that, you know, you should encourage children to realize that, you know, it's okay to be curious about their bodies, but they just have to be able to recognize who might be potentially dangerous to them. And, you know, not squashing their natural curiosity and not, you know, trying to, like, you know, deter any kind of normal human function, but you do have to teach them and you have to train them and you have to be very specific.
I'm just going to ask you, just in curiosity, what your thoughts are. I've got a friend who I won't mention his name on air, who actually was teaching her 2.5-year-old daughter parts of the body, did teach about clitoris, labia, vulva, and basically another, this daughter, she's going through a nudity phase right now, came out and actually showed herself to family friends and was like, look, mm-hmm. there's my clitoris. And it was interesting because this friend's that I'm mentioning, who was the parent, was really appalled because her friends that that were shown her daughter's parts, basically what they said was, that's nice, but those that you want to save that for somebody special later on. And it was interesting because she was quite upset and said that at 2 years old, that the child just understands parts of the body and doesn't understand the right and wrong part, and that, yeah. that we were subjecting them to shame. So I was just curious in terms of what your thoughts were in regards to that, because my thoughts
were... And how old is that for the child?
And the child's 2.5 and is in childcare, which my thought was just if she's not, you know, so open, she's just vulnerable to predators, was my personal
thought. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the thing about that is teaching children the correct words is a great thing, mm-hmm. but then you have to go one step further and you have to explain, you know, the whole topic of modesty and, you know, mm-hmm. that it's okay if you're home with mommy and daddy and you want to take your diaper off and run around or whatever, mm-hmm. but, you know, you have to sort of make a line, I think, or start to teach them the line that, you know, you only really want to be naked at home, and you want to show those parts just to yourself and maybe just mommy and daddy for now. And exactly what you said, you know, those are private parts and they're special parts, and, you know, it's a lesson in modesty. But I think kids are going to make mistakes about that, mm-hmm. because they're learning. So, I mean, I think that's pretty normal. As far as her behavior and, mm-hmm. yeah, I would think that's okay, normal, in the normal range of things, but,
would you say, though, that it would be traumatic
for the
child?
Same thing, run around naked.
So, yeah. No, I think my mother had stories about that about myself, too. But I was just curious, would it be traumatic for the child, though, do you think, later on, where... because that was the big concern of the parent, was the fact that just in regards to the reaction, that it was it may cause trauma for the child later on in regards to her sexuality.
Because of using the words?
No, more because the friends that reacted and were just like, okay, you don't want to do that now. You wanted to save it for when you know somebody special later on, and basically accused them of having... basically guilt and shame in regards to their own sexuality.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's a little off of the friend who said that, because, mm-hmm. you know, the teaching of all of this stuff is really up to parents. And, you know, does this person have children is my question, I guess, because, you know, kids do and say the funniest things. And oftentimes people that don't have children really don't know how to handle some mm-hmm. of the things that you encounter with children. But
yeah, she actually does.
She did?
She does.
Yeah, I guess it just goes to show how differently people are. But I would hope that wouldn't affect her permanently. But I mean, that's just a tough call. I guess it just depends mm-hmm. on how your friend handles it, too, because... The thing, sometimes when this whole topic comes up about, you know, sexual abuse or curiosity or kids playing doctor or whatever, a lot of times people overreact and, mm-hmm. and they make, like, a huge deal out of something that is really an innocent, harmless thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then that makes the child feel like they've done something bad. And, you know, the part of the message of this book is that you need to talk about, you know, your parts, understand what they are, learn how to take care of them, be modest, you know, and you know, model good behavior to your children. But, you know, you don't want to make a child feel like they've done something mm-hmm. awful when they're just doing something that's completely normal. So, and I think that happens when children report sexual abuse to parents or to teachers. You know, when you overreact to a report and, mm-hmm. and you, like, get all emotional or angry or freak out, a lot of times kids will retract their statement or change their story or just decide just to not tell you.
Wow.
So you, I think, and I had that experience with one of my children from last year, and who came to me to report something because her mom had kind of like screamed and said, "How could you have done that?" That was her reaction.
Wow.
And blame the child. And so she eventually, a few weeks later, came and told me, and I was like, okay, well, let's just talk about it. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can't get all aggressive and emotional and mad when kids are coming to you with that kind of information. You just have to be calm and ask open-ended questions and, you know, just lead them through a discussion. So
mm-hmm.
that's my little opinion.
No, it's a very valid opinion. One of the other questions I was going to ask is in regards to dealing with kids, like you're mentioning in regards to your son's case in the top of the book, just which I was actually surprised about the bribes, which I guess I've never put that in context with, like, I'll pay you $50 if you let me do this, in regards
yeah.
to adult child, yes, but I'd never thought about it as kid versus child.
Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, one of those things I missed, never thought of needing to tell my kids.
Mm-hmm.
But this little boy who made this advance on my son, you know, he was using these phrases and these terms and these words that were not normal for a 7-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And so long story short, you know, after a long time of figuring out this whole mess, it turns out that he was actually being abused by his 14-year-old cousin. And so it seems like when that's one of those red flags
mm-hmm.
as parents, when your kids start using words and terminology that isn't correct for their age,
mm-hmm.
and it's in a sexual nature, that's a big red flag. But this child tried all these techniques on my son, and you know, ranged from, you know, peer pressure to bribes to threats to, you know, "I'm not going to be your friend anymore," and "your
wow.
mom's not going to believe you if you tell her," and, you know, he used them all, so he had been kind of trained, and
wow.
I think, it was quite shocking, because I had no idea that that could cross over into, you know, my life, but it did, and it makes sense, because that's what some kids go through from older kids or from adults, so.
Wow.
Yeah,
no, when I read that, I was absolutely shocked. I couldn't believe that happened. Like, I believe it, but I hadn't put two and two together. And it was interesting because before the show, when I was thinking of what some of the stuff I wanted to touch on, I actually wanted to touch on, and you nailed it on the head, just because sometimes, especially in certain parts in smaller rural areas, I've got a couple friends who are sex educators who are working on some
mm-hmm.
of the curriculum development in regards to the school system. And one of the challenges was the fact that siblings sleeping with siblings where they didn't know what was wrong.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And so I was curious in terms of your thoughts in regards to that, like just how things that should be put in place so that that can change, hopefully.
Yeah, I did not cover that in the book because that wasn't one of the scenarios that you know, had been shared with me, but that's something that happens all the time, and
wow.
I think some of it is that whole, like, normal sexual curiosity,
mm-hmm.
you know, but then to a certain point, it goes on this very bad tangent, and I think the only way to deal with that is, you know, to get back to the whole, like, specifics of, like, who can touch your body and why, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, why is it okay for you to, you know, touch your body yourself in your room, but your sister is not allowed to be in the room with you or to touch you and vice versa. Like, I think those kind of things just have to be clarified and explained and almost like turned into, you know, safety procedures and rules so that kids understand it. But it's like something you have to constantly talk about and teach. And, you know, the more this whole, just the topic of sex education
mm-hmm.
and, you know, starting from a very early age with, you know, trying to help your kids understand that everybody has different parts and, And then as they get a little older, you get the where do babies come from, and you have, you know, kids, all sorts of questions, and you need to answer things about sex and bodies, and, you know, puberty comes into play. It needs to almost be just like this constant conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's not, when things come up, it's not so taboo to report, you know, bad things are going on, because if it's not viewed as a negative thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, then it won't be so much of one.
That's
so.
Really true.
Yeah, and in the story, you know, one of the interesting things, one of the stories is about a babysitter. There's a scenario about a babysitter wanting to play games with children to show each other their private parts. And that story is actually a story from my childhood when I was, I think, 8 years old.
Wow.
And we had a babysitter, and she wanted to play show and tell and turn on the lights and, you know, do all these show and tell things. And, you know, it was a minor event, but because in my family we had this sort of open policy about talking about this thing, mm-hmm. for me it was a minor event because I was like, I'm not playing that game. And as soon as my mom came in, we told my mom that would be the last time for that babysitter, and
wow.
and it was. So mm-hmm. That one of the things that I've heard from a lot of parents is that, and you see this in the research and in all the information on various websites, is that, you know, it's often turned into a game, and then kids can be easily tricked into this whole game playing.
Oh.
And then the other thing is that a lot of times when there are adults involved in this kind of thing, like a teacher or a coach or a pastor or whatever, these people spend all this time building trust with young children, and then, you know, it's often hard for children to say no to somebody who's in an authoritarian role. So it's just the training that I think kids needs to focus on, you know, all sorts of facets to keep them safe. And one thing that I think is really important is that as parents, like, one thing that's easy to do and that can help is that it's important, you know, to cover this topic, but there's also some parental responsibility involved in limiting, I think, or minimizing the opportunity that
yes.
these kind of things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So,
can you give an example of how to do that just for some of our listeners out there?
Well, for instance, if you have to have a daycare provider mm-hmm. take care of your children while you're at work, then one way to limit that opportunity would be to make sure that the daycare provider is registered and certified mm-hmm. from the state, and make sure that there's never one adult in charge of children, that there are multiple adults in charge of children, and that the ratios are correct. And, you know, there should never be an instance where one adult is with one child, because it's just not safe. And as a teacher, we are never allowed to be in any kind of situation where that kind of thing could happen. Like, last year I had a little boy who could not unbutton his pants. And everybody else had gone out to recess, but I know that I never want to be in a position where I'm unbuttoning somebody's pants and it's me and another boy, so I have to go to the office and take the boy to the office where there are two adults and help him with his button, and then he goes to the bathroom. There are, like, procedures that you can follow, and you can check out places to make sure that people are qualified and following the right procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as just, like, playing and play dates and sleepovers and all that, my children had to sleep over this person's house kind of out of necessity because I had an ill 3-day-old baby and a deployed husband. But, you know, I tried to, you know, make this situation as safe as possible. Both my children slept over, and even that didn't work. Sometimes there is just you know, you can try everything, but sometimes it doesn't work. And after our sleepover experience, we, you know, although it was a necessity, I completely feel differently about sleepovers in general and don't think that they're a good idea at all, unless you're maybe 10 and up. And, you know, it was unfortunate I had to depend on neighbors during a time of need, but they were good friends and I knew them very well. So even if you didn't know people very well, things can happen.
Yeah, because as you said, it was the 14-year-old cousin that was abusing their son.
Yeah, yeah. And there's no way to know that.
No.
And, you know, so.
No. How has the... I am so sorry what's happened to your son, but I mean, I love what you've done in terms of just such a wonderful cathartic way of working through things where you've actually developed these tools to share with other children and parents and educators.
Yeah, we're pretty happy that it was published because it's a topic that, you know, isn't on the top 10 list of books that parents want to buy, which I think is weird when you go to Barnes and Noble and you look in that section, there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it's strange, and it's neat that my son wanted to write the book, and now that he's older, and we're getting all these interview requests, he's actually really kind of interested in telling his story now that he's 12, and a lot of the humor in the book is completely hysterical because it's right out of his mouth and right out of his journal, and he has a lot of ownership in the book, and he's proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how in terms of moving forward from it, because the kids were around the same age, did they go to the same school, and working through just in terms of the social stuff, like, because of course if you have to see that abuser again. How did that work on a social structure where it, so it doesn't turn into a bullying situation?
Well, we, after that event, first thing we did was went to the pediatrician and just reported what happened and talked about what to do and decided that what would be best for him would just be to, you know, sort of calmly just let a week or two go by, talk about it, and then, you know, keep distance from said other child, which we did. But they were all very good friends, and I was a good friend of theirs, and it became extremely awkward to just even be near them because this other family just was in denial for a while about the whole situation. So we ended up moving. We ended up moving to a different town, and that was sort of out of necessity because my husband was deployed to Iraq, so I moved home to Connecticut and lived with my family in Connecticut, and Jack started going through some really hard times with the dad being deployed and dealing. He felt a lot of guilt for this whole event, even though,
it
you know, nothing too serious happened to him. He kept saying he felt stupid, and he felt like the dumbest kid in the world. And I kept saying to him, no, you are the smartest kid in the world, Jack, because you told me so that I could help you so that it could stop. And that message took 6 months to actually sink in. And, you know, we did probably therapy with him once every 2 weeks for 6 months, and we did a whole lot of journal writing. And then we started realizing that we had this really great thing, and writing this book just helped him get it out and kind of move forward. So that has been a good thing for him. And he doesn't really bring it up anymore. But lately, we've been seeing all this stuff on the news with the Penn State scandal. And, you know, he will say things like, I wonder if that book could help anybody up there with that football team or, you know. I'm like, you know, Jack, it could. We're going to try. We're going to try and get this book out to as many people as possible. So.
No, I think that's so important.
Yeah.
We're going to take a really quick short break, and we will be back in a moment. You're listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR, and hopefully my voice will come back for the next little bit.
CITR 101.9 FM and Discorder Magazine are proud to present the Fit to Print Art Show, Friday, December 16th at the Interurban Gallery. Come celebrate the release of the debut album Little Skeletons by Lost Lovers Brigade and the release of Moon of Neptune by Kellarissa. With special guests, shimmering stars, DJs, and more, it's all happening Friday, December 16th at the Interurban Gallery. Free art opening and reception at 8 p.m. with cover after 9, or get your advance tickets from Red Cat, Scratch, or Zulu Records. The Fit to Print Art Show, Friday, December 16th, is proudly sponsored by CITR 101.9 FM.
Think you have what it takes to be the next Ostra, Mother Mother, Dan Mangan? Your chance is now. Youth Inc. magazine is proud to launch the third annual BC's Best Teen Band Contest. Contestants battle for a chance to win cash money, recording sessions with professional Canadian recording artists, and to land the cover of Youth Inc. magazine. Bands have until December 5th to submit to youthinc.ca/bandcontest. May the best band win.
Our publisher, Ken, was just like, oh, well, what exactly is it? And I'm like, well, it really flows. It's literally.
Remember when you first learned about the birds and the bees? Want to learn more about the birds and the bees and the berries, urban agriculture, delicious homegrown food, solar energy, and much more? Check out the Society Promoting Environmental Conservation. Come to one of our workshops, join our solar panel tour, or go to our website, www.spec.bc.ca, for more information.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the helpline is one of many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The helpline number is 604-696-4666. Or contact us online at www.aidsvancouver.org.
And we are back in Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR. And if you are just joining us right now, I am talking to the wonderful Kimberly King, who has written the book, I Said No. And for those of you who are not familiar with sexual abuse and just how key it is, just like 1 out of 3 women worldwide, according to Amnesty International, 1 out of 6 men have dealt with sexual violence before the age of 18. I think of it as an epidemic. It's really important. But what shocked me, and I'm so glad with Kimberly King's book, is it also happens kid versus kid, which a lot of times I think we as adults tend to overlook as playing doctor and not really look at it, and just how important where it is abusive, and especially if it's and there is a difference between exploring healthy sexuality versus, and the big thing is boundaries and just knowing where you're comfortable.
Exactly.
Yeah. So in regards to, I know on our break we were just chatting, and I'm sure half of you heard me because I forgot to turn my mic off in regards to that. But what are some of the things that, how people can get involved with just changing so less kids get abused?
Well, I think their most important thing is to, as parents and teachers and educators, community members, to learn the facts and, you know, research the facts. As parents, I think one of the most important things parents can do is, like I was saying before, minimizing opportunities and talking openly about, like, normal curiosity versus inappropriate sexual contact.
Mm-hmm.
As parents and community members, we always need to stay alert and sort of watch our children more carefully and, you know, be in tune with what's going on. And once you feel like you need to report an abusive situation, you know, I always say you should err on the side of caution, and it's okay to be suspicious, and it's okay to call a hotline if you think something's going on. It's better to call and be wrong mm-hmm. than not to call and be right. And so I have here, you know, there, the Darkness to Light organization has a hotline, which is 1-866-4-LIGHT, F-O-R-L-I-G-H-T. And then we also have the National Child Abuse Hotline, which is 1-800-4, the letter A, and child. And then I would also encourage everyone to get involved, because it is an epidemic, and the more research I do, the more scared I become. But there are prevention programs that you can volunteer for. You can volunteer for a Rape Crisis Hotline Center. You can ask your schools, your churches, your organizations to bring some training in on this topic. And you can also contact your congressmen, your leaders in your community to, you know, pay attention to this issue and change some laws and get this epidemic under control. I agree with you, because I feel like this is what, like 30 years ago, the whole domestic violence thing was like the dirty little secret, and now this is a huge dirty little secret. And it's like not getting the attention it needs. And
I think that's the other thing that's really important, because with the sexual abuse, it does happen to boys too. And I think people forget about that part of it, where they assume it just happens to women or girls. And it's boys too. Like one out of six men have dealt with sexual abuse before the age of 18.
Right. And then they also say that if you have been a victim of a sexual abuse, then you're, you know, I think the percentage is 70% more likely to be involved in all sorts of bad activities during your life, like alcohol abuse and drug abuse and prostitution and depression and suicide attempts.
And even becoming an abuser.
Without treatment, it's, you know, hard to recover from.
Very much so. And even as you're mentioning, just the fact that it was another 5-year-old, wasn't it, that abused you?
Yeah, it was a 6-year-old. My son was 5, and the little boy was 6,
wow.
I believe, at the time.
Where they become abusers, too, because it's like they don't necessarily see it as wrong, because that's what it was. Or if they do see it as wrong, they just don't want to really look at that at that stage.
Mm-hmm. And when you're 6 and you're being manipulated, you might not know it's wrong if you're not in an environment where your parents are talking about it. It's an open kind of discussion. You just might not understand. So young kids are sometimes too young to understand what's going on.
For that, we need to be the eyes and ears for them.
Yeah, exactly. And in our book, you know, one of the big points that we make is that you have to rehearse these things with kids over and over again, and you need to train them. And one of the phrases that runs through our book is when something is happening, you need to think about it, then you need to say something, like use your words to make it stop, and then you need to do something. So, like, remove yourself from the situation, or make a plan to get away, or tell a parent, or, you know, leave that friend. And so for parents, I think the more scenario chat you can do with your child and about various situations they might find themselves in, the better prepared they'll be.
No, that makes perfect sense. If this happened in a kindergarten class that you were teaching, and you were aware of the situation where one child abused another one and it was within your class, what are some of the steps in terms of making sure it doesn't turn into, escalate into a bullying situation after the fact, especially once the child's actually told yourself, perhaps told a parent, where you've raised awareness with the kid, with the parents? And I'm just thinking about
if, it, if an
peers.
Event happened in a class,
yeah.
in a classroom, well, I don't know that, in my classroom it really couldn't happen because I have one classroom and two adults, and we are always monitoring the children. But, you know, it does happen in bathrooms at schools, and things like can definitely turn south when you don't have things sort of tight in your classroom. We have little bathrooms, one for boy, one for girl. Nobody mixes. And so we do have this little sense of security in my classroom. But I think when these kind of things happen at schools, if teachers find out about these kind of situations, they're mandated reporters, so they have to tell their principals, and they're supposed to report any kind of events to social services or the police. So there is that procedure in place, but I'm sure that bullying and, you know, that makes me think when you're in middle school, bullying, I get the whole, like, Facebook cyberbullying stuff. You have to wonder if that could kind of develop when you're dealing with this topic as well, which I'm sure it does. But I don't know. I mean, I guess I would just advise anybody that is involved in any situation just to talk to somebody that they trust, and, you know, that will help make it stop. Bullying is getting a lot of attention right now, and hopefully that's going to end it. And this, I hope, gets the same amount of attention.
I hope so, too, because as we said at the top of this, it's an epidemic worldwide, and it's so important to have those conversations.
Yeah, definitely.
So what's next for you? Like, in a perfect world, if you could click your heels and you're wearing ruby slippers and anything could come true in regards to this book, what would you like to see, like, in terms of the actual impact on society?
Well, I would love for this book to be included in, like, curriculum development for public schools and, you know, eventually be, like, a worldwide tool for parents and teachers to educate their kids on this topic. I don't think this topic is definitely not going to be solved with just one book, but it can be, like, one of those tools in your toolbox to, you know, help get the message out there. And I think, you know, the whole situation of this topic being taboo and icky and, you know, the uncomfortableness of it all needs to fade away so that we can, you know, talk in reality and solve some real problems. So I think that is definitely done through education, and curriculum would be a great place to start. My professor from the University of Maine who wrote the preface to this book, her name is Dr. Sandra Caron, and she's a human sexuality professor up there in Orono. She wrote the preface and read the book and loved it, and so she's required all her students in human sexuality to read this book. So it's required reading up there, and I was so happy about that because I've gotten a lot of feedback from college students about, you know, how this book has totally changed the way they think about it, and most of the people in her class are usually training to be educators or, you know, child development specialists or therapists. So that's just a pretty neat thing, and that would be great to get it included in college curriculums as well.
I think that'd be really great. So
yeah,
definitely, because especially that's the best, easiest way to reach out to a lot of educators.
Yeah. Definitely.
Either that or an extracurricular one where it's, I don't know if teachers have to do extra credit courses afterwards, as I know in Canada, medical professionals need to.
Yes, they do. They do.
And which would be helpful as well, just to be aware of.
Yes, definitely. So, and, you know, this book has, I'm already happy with this book because it's, I know it's helped a number of people, and that makes my son feel like, you know, he has helped people and he's proud of himself and he's done a good deed and he's very proud of his actions, and, you know, he wants to write more books to help more children.
That's so awesome.
He's an excellent writer now too, and it's turned a bad thing into
something
a really
positive,
good and productive thing, which is, I think, really kind of the only way to handle things like this. So by doing something.
Very much so. So if people want to get a hold of you, find out more information, or buy the book, what's the best way to contact you?
The best way to contact me, I have my own website, which is www.kidpublishing.com. And that's a little website I just started that sort of explains our family and how we got into this mission of writing books that help children. So it's kidtokidpublishing.com. And then to buy this book and lots of other books on the topics of, you know, emotional health and child development for children, boldenpublishing.com is my publisher. And there's a lot of information about the book and me on that website as well. And that's B-O-U-L-D-N, boldenpublishing.com.
Nice.
That would be the best two ways.
No, that sounds wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and especially with the time difference, I so appreciate that.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. My house is cleaner. I got to stay up later and get lots of work done between 10 and 1, so... It was a good thing, and I'm happy to stay up and, you know, talk about this topic and look forward to hearing your feedback from your listeners. I hope they enjoyed it and learned a little something. I'm not an expert on this topic by any means, but there are so many resources out there, and the Darkness to Light website is a great place to start, and that's where the experts are, so...
Thank you. And just one last question. Are you on Twitter?
No, I'm not on Twitter.
Okay. Just wondering. We've got a lot of our listeners who are on Twitter, so, yeah, so some people have been tweeting during the show, so I was just curious.
Oh, no, I'm not on Twitter, but I am on Facebook. We started a Facebook page.
If you go
on to Facebook and type in I Said No and Kimberly King, you'll get to our Facebook page.
Okay. No, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I'm going to let you go to sleep now.
Okay. Well, thank you again for having me.
You're welcome. And you've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Up next is Hans von Klaus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding you through the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful week. Bye-bye, everyone.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A, positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't.